It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got Alex, we've got Andy, we've got news. We're going to talk a little bit about the Olympics. Okay, just a little bit, but then we'll talk about the Samsung trial, the new rumors about the iPhone connector, and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 311, recorded August 7th, 2012. It goes to 11:36. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today at GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code MacBreak. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to MacBreak.hover.com and enter the offer code MacBreak. And by the new Text Expander 4 from Smile, which dramatically increases the ways to automate your work with advanced fill-in snippets. Great for creating form letter templates that can be customized on the fly. Learn more at SmileSoftware.com/MacBreak. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files. Just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MacBreak and get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers the latest Mac and Apple news. Joining us right now from the left coast, Mr. Alex Lindsay. I threw them there.
But I'm on your right side.
You're on my right side. Well, you're on the left side of the screen.
Yes.
So it all is good. Good to have you from Pixel Core.
It's good to be here.
And where have you been? This is like the where in the world is Alex Lindsay?
Last week I was in LA and Houston. This week I'm in DC and New York and Pittsburgh and Nashville.
Wow.
But before the next show.
Wow, you are a traveling man.
It's gotten a little crazy.
You got a copy of The Diamond Club in your iBooks, so you have something to read?
I do have the copy. I haven't broken into it yet.
Yeah, no,
I don't
it.
Really read very well.
No, you got to save it for a special moment.
I can't really read.
Mm-hmm. Also with us on the right coast, Mr. Andy Anatko of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hello, Leo. And because I'm sitting roughly 5 feet to your left, that means that I'm in a time zone that's roughly... What's that? About 21 seconds earlier. So if there is an apocalypse of the sun, I will be able to tell you about it. I'll have 21 seconds to tell you about it before we're obliterated by plasma radiation. So we have that to look forward to.
Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy. Hey, just completely parenthetically, although there were quite a few Macs on the desk at JPL, I did note. What about that curiosity? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? Gold medal or what?
That is awesome. I mean, the level of complexity is just mind-boggling.
To land
something
freaking
there.
Crane.
Yeah.
Who thought that up? That's amazing. A platform. And then it worked.
It worked. When I saw a picture of what they were going to do, I was like, oh, this is going to be another one of those side of the wall moments.
I think we were all just going, I can't believe they're trying this. They couldn't test it because it's too complex. Yeah. I thought. Yeah. But we were all, when they did it, God, wasn't that a great moment?
Yeah, I mean, I really believe that somewhere on some whiteboard, like at JPL, it was, okay, if it works, we'll have this incredible, like, one-ton rover. They'll have a two-year mission. If it doesn't work, we're gonna expose about 80,000 years of strata from the surface of Mars so the next probe can just take samples and get the geological story from the crater left behind by not one but two of these spacecraft that failed to deploy correctly. But, yeah, it was just such great drama because obviously you didn't get to see video of this thing landing, not until like later on. And we found out that as the cherry on the cake, NASA actually used another Mars observatory to actually photograph.
Isn't that amazing?
To photograph the spacecraft as it was parachuting down. But like all you see is these like dozens of people in baby blue golf shirts just like staring intently and then exploding in one moment altogether. And it's like, oh, God, this makes up for like losing, getting eliminated from the field hockey Olympic trials against New Zealand 2 days earlier. This really does make up for that. You feel red, white, and blue all over.
I know. I was just like cheering.
I was crying.
In today's media world, what I really wanted to see is like just as it was going into its landing thing, I wanted to see it blow out like four little cameras that just take all these different angles.
Well, you have to acknowledge,
and they stream live, and then they just plummet into the
ground.
Not
to diminish this in any way, but NASA is brilliant at social media.
Yeah,
I mean the thing's tweeting.
Yeah.
I mean, it was done in every way. It was done really beautifully. The press conferences, they had Will I Am and Will Wheaton together at the press conference. I mean, that, you know, they're clearly have learned quite a bit about
that's still authentic because, you know, Will I Am is really into science and development.
Again, so it's not to diminish them. They need to do this. Right. The sad thing, the thing that really makes me sad, and I was talking with Tom Merritt about this, is that there wasn't beforehand much talk about it. And he said, yeah, what they didn't manage to do is convince people or get the word out about what was going on.
Right.
And I wish they had. Tom did a great job. We did a special that night, live special with Tom, Dr. Kiki, Justin Robert Young. He had Bill Selon, who was the crane lead engineer on the crane, the sky crane. I mean, it was just really good stuff. And that's one thing. You know, I was talking to Lisa's son, who's in fourth grade. I said, are you excited? He said, about what?
Mm-hmm.
They had not talked about it in fourth grade. And I really think that that's sad.
I used to be, you know, sad. I used to stay home for every shuttle launch. I mean, I'd be at home. I was, until the school decided to start stopping school and letting us all watch the shuttle launches. Like, I would just stay home and watch the shuttle. And, like, that was a huge event. Mm. And it should be a huge event. And it is. I mean, because it's revolutionary. I mean, what we're doing there. And the thing I think also people, you know, when people have discussions of NASA, they don't realize how much of all our everyday tools, like all the stuff.
This all comes from NASA.
That's all driven from NASA. Yeah. I mean, I know that Apple has a couple patents, but, you know, we have to understand that a lot of this technology, a lot of the surfaces, the materials, the technologies, all of that stuff is driven out of these. It's not just them going to Mars. It's all the things they had to figure out to get there, you know, affects everything that we do on every day.
Right.
I mean, this is exactly why I was disappointed that they retired the shuttle fleet, but I wasn't heartbroken about it because I know about all these other missions, these uncrewed missions they've got going. And to me, each one of these missions is sending back hard science. And the second, I think, responsibility of the space program is not only to do good science, but also to inspire another generation of explorers to build the next generation of probes and crew the next generation of crewed spacecraft. And I think that something like Curiosity does a much, much better, at least as good a job as a fleet of space shuttles.
Well, and that's, to me, that was the conclusion I came to. Had this been a manned mission, of course, we like watching humans. We like the human story, and so of course there would have been a lot more publicity, a lot more press. But in fact, the smart scientific thing to do is to do exactly what they're doing, which is unmanned mission.
Well, and I think in some ways
you're a huge amount of data.
I think in some ways we're seeing NASA pivot, where they're really focusing on that Mars and beyond, and letting commercial operators manage the close up stuff. You know, okay, like we're done with that. We understand how to do that. Now we're gonna move. We're gonna do the big lifting that requires that process, and let everybody else handle the close stuff. So, and to tie it back into our conversation here, G3 processor.
Was there a G3 in there?
Yeah, this is a little 200 megahertz G3.
Yeah,
G3 processor running the.
It says 256 megabytes of system memory, 2 gigabytes of storage or a cache for the data that's sending back. And this is an actual just off-the-shelf item running the same operating system that runs an Airport Extreme base station.
I thought it was a RAD 750. Isn't that
a G3?
That's a G3. That's like a mil-spec G3.
Yeah. The
You know how much they cost? $200,000.
but that's the thing when the damn thing has to work has to work while it's being sent through reentry and bombarded with radiation, $200,000 is not a whole lot of money to spend if you want to make sure the 2 + 2 always equals 4 under every atmospheric and interstellar condition.
That's radiation hardened. It's
so it's not exactly an Arduino.
It's interesting though, because in a way it is a power our PC architecture. They are using older, less sophisticated technology, well, that's but it's all difference. It needs.
Yeah. Well, less sophisticated is another way of saying proven, reliable.
Yeah,
something that engineers have mounds of experience with, yeah. And that's something that's often kind of cast aside. It's you realize that. Just look to your game console. The games that are being produced from a game platform that's been out for 3 years are always better than the right. newest games from the very, very latest console that's been out for about a month. Because over the past 3 years, developers have figured out how to solve every single problem they need to solve to get every single solution they need to get. Whereas if you throw brand new hardware and a brand new OS and a brand new API at them, all they can do is the most linear, obvious answer. And that's not always the most efficient thing.
Well, and also, when you look at the development pipe for any of these things, that it's a decade or more just sure. to get it up. And the G3 was actually a unique situation, you know, because all those teams, all the Motorola teams work separately or were working separately at the time. So the G4 and the G3, you know, the big thing was is that, you know, Apple kind of, you know, the reason that one of the reasons that this is the rumor anyway, not that I would know, that they plowed under all of the G4s, you know, all that licensing and everything else. And part of that issue was is the G3 team, you know, because they trade notes between the Motorola teams and the G3 team. Said, oh, yeah, and we're going to add a little bit of larger L2 cache, you know, to the chip and da 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 da. And it was kind of like a side note. Well, that's why when the laptop came out, it was faster than the desktops because it had this little change that the G4s didn't have, you know, the initial ones. So suddenly you had these laptops. And the thing is Apple had licensed the G3 processors for all of the power computing, Motorola. And so Motorola kind of, you know, I don't think they did it on purpose, but the G3 team, you know, so what was about to happen was Apple was about to have all these G4s that were going to get
slower,
that were expensive, that were about to get their lunch taken out wow. by all these G3s that were actually performing much faster than the G4s that were clocking, you know, or doing performance, you know.
Isn't
they wouldn't clock faster. They'd clock slower. But they were
all that L2 cache makes a huge difference.
It made a massive difference. And now we see huge L2 caches and everything right. else. But and that all kind of progressed. But that was I think it's old enough now. I can.
Isn't that interesting? You had heard that.
I was out drinking with some engineers.
You had heard that.
Not from Apple.
No, of course not.
So anyway, but wow, no, literally not from Apple, but some other engineers.
That's very interesting. And it makes perfect sense.
There's a little backstory for you for the 90s.
I didn't realize that.
It was a huge deal. It would have killed Apple. I mean, it would have killed them if they hadn't plowed those under. Like it would have been the end.
I mean, it doesn't even make sense that they were developing these processors in separate kind of sealed off.
Yeah, they're all working because one's working on one generation, the next one's working on the next generation.
I think Intel does it that way.
I don't know. Huh. I don't know. And I don't know if they still do it, but that was one of the things that happened back then.
Anyway, just to thank you, everybody who worked on that Mars Space Lab, the MSL, and to the
JPL. We can't wait to see because, you know, it's going to be.
It's so exciting.
I don't know how operationally it's going to be up there for quite some time, so we're going to see a lot of new stuff.
Which one is still walking around? Is it Opportunity or Spirit is still running around?
It'll be years of cool
things. Amazing. You know, it's kind of fun to watch the Olympics. Of course, NBC didn't even know the Mars thing happened, but to be watching the Olympics and to be watching the Mars thing, and you just really see two different sides of what humans can be. Right. And I found that, you know, in this day and age, it's really uplifting to know that we can do these amazing things. Somebody made a animated GIF, which is hysterical, of the winning. What is it they call that vault? It's vaulting, right? On the thing and the gymnastics, they're vaulting. The winning vault from 1958, which was basically boom, boom, boom.
I survived.
Compared to the winning vault, the gold medal vault from 2013, which boom, and it's amazing. Yeah. That in 55 years,
they were showing I mean, some of the archival stuff from the Olympics also was really good. They're showing the old you know, gymnast stuff where the actual balance beam or the uneven bars fell apart when they jumped on. And they said that, like, the budget, you know, this was like the budget for in 1948 was something like $136,000 for the whole event.
It's a very different, you know, and it's a, like, very different yes. event.
Yeah.
Slightly different. But at the same time, doesn't it show you, like, how the humans can, like, screw things up sometimes? Because I'm watching these gymnasts. I'm seeing them do this incredible, just superhuman things. And in any movie, you'd say, well, there's no way in hell they did that, like, as a practical effect. They just did it on green screen. They manipulated it. And it's like, I'm like, my jaw is on the floor. And the commentator's like,
oh my God, what an incredible flub. He just lost that. That just cost him a medal. I'm like, what?
What?
Oh, that shaved.
Their legs were like this.
He's crying. He's falling apart. His parents are turning their backs on.
What?
What? Just
have you seen that they're doing bullet time? Like a little mini bullet time for gymnastics? It's like a...
What's that? Oh, yeah. So I saw that. I meant to ask you about this.
Yeah, so it's just a bunch of... That's just a bunch of cameras. I'm sure that what they have is a bunch of... I mean, I don't know what they have there.
Highlight it. I don't know if NBC made it.
They just
a big
cut
deal
to it every once in a while.
But every once in a while, they'll show during the vault, the athletes, and they'll freeze the athlete, and they'll rotate all the way around it.
It's not particularly... I don't think it's very
It's not
useful.
Very well done,
It's
either.
Not very well done. But what it... Here's my guess.
It's a little fuzzy. So they don't have as many cameras.
Standard def.
Okay.
So it's a and what they probably have is
they're going from
what
HD
they probably
to
have is little web cameras or little PTZ like little a whole bunch a little array of cameras that they probably put out there that are kind of on a string, and they probably have 30 or 40 of them there, so it's just like quick little, you know, and they're all
they render it in seconds because they're able to show that almost instantly.
Because what's happening is all that those images are being organized into a file that can be immediately played back.
Rendering at all.
Imagine having a folder. I mean, when we did this for a project that I did a couple years ago, and so what we had was a whole bunch of remote cameras, and what they did is all of them fed an image to a file, and every camera, it was just like, you know, it had the image of like what the time stamp was, right, when it was firing, and then it also, each camera was, you know, it basically told it was frame one, frame two, frame three, frame four. So basically from QuickTime's perspective, we could literally tell QuickTime, go into that folder and play it back, and it would play every camera back as its own, it would just play it back as a sequence because it looked like a sequence to QuickTime. As long as all the names are the same, except for that last thing, it'll just go, oh, that's a sequence and playback.
Now I understand. I thought that maybe there was some interpolation, but there are enough cameras that they actually have an animation.
I think that what they did, when I looked at it, I don't think it was it might have been some interpolation. I mean, that's totally possible because it does look really soft. So it could be interpolation, but I think that actually what they're doing
is it's SD. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah. We're going from an HD, we're watching HD, and all of a sudden, briefly, there's an SD video in the middle. And that's why it looks soft.
And of course, the person who designed it is like, what? I mean, we just spun around them. You know, who cares if it's SD?
Yeah, really? No kidding. They froze. You froze the athlete in midair, and we spun around them in real time. And you're worried about the quad.
Give it a second. It's going to space.
Anyway, that's okay. One more thing, and then we're going to get back to the Mac. This is all technology.
Yes.
There you go.
We're geeking out.
TV meets technology. New York Times, men's 100-meter sprint, one race, every medalist ever. So Usain Bolt, 9.63. By the way, I saw a physicist do the chalk work. He says the actual limit, the theoretical limit is 9.43 because of air drag or whatever.
We still got a lot of room.
Yeah. Watch, how far ahead of every Olympic medalist is he? This is the New York Times doing great stuff on their...
Just how fast was Usain Bolt's gold medal sprint?
I probably can't play this
whole
thing.
Put him on a slightly bigger stage.
Live a little.
See him race against every Olympic medalist since 1896. This imaginary...
I don't know how they did this.
...assembled using runners' average speeds reveals just how much faster sprinters have become.
Usain was insane.
Yeah. A few lanes over, we see
him... It looked like he was cruising.
...who dominated the field in
Beijing. He wasn't even breathing hard.
Yeah. Well, it ran for 10 seconds.
Hey, anyone can do that.
You know.
He won in 1984, too.
We can't show the whole thing, but go to the New York Times page.
That's a great anime. That's a great little
video. Let's also praise the 10-meter diving gold medalist who hit the water. I tied the world record for falling from a 10-meter height into water set by the first person to ever dive from a 10-meter board. But still, he tied it, and so that was good enough.
And then you have the fencer who lost because there was a 15-year-old intern running the clock.
The Korean, is that what happened?
Yeah, there was only 1 second left. So there was
she wouldn't not leave a, the
so because there was 1 second left when she and all she had to do was survive for 1 second, but he didn't start the clock. And so, because he's a 15-year-old intern,
a big protest.
And then she got this like consolation prize or whatever, which doesn't look like a medal; it looks like a ribbon.
Oh, that's and, sad.
That's why I wish that NBC would be a little bit more. Yeah. They understand. I would say, where is the actual drama of the events that are unfolding? Yeah. This is the most incredible thing because apparently in fencing, this is like what I was reading later on, that you concede the match when you leave the when you leave the platform.
Right.
Until you leave the platform, however, you have not conceded that you accept the judge's ruling. So it was just this filibuster standoff where she just stands there you know, while no one knows what's going on, while now right. security is up there saying, please don't make us carry you off. We'll look like such jerks if we are carrying you off.
I love that it's called the pissed.
The pissed.
The pissed.
Yeah.
Which is that where it's French. I'm pissed comes from?
Yeah. I'm pissed. That's where it comes from. Exactly.
I also say that I was unaware that when they score a touch, the person that you hit, your fencing mask actually lights up like a Cylon.
Yeah, wasn't that cool?
Now they have these red lights that say, okay, you're definitely dead now.
And of course, for all of you watching, all of this, of course, is run on a Mac.
Is it?
I don't know. I just thought I'd try to tie it back in.
All right, we're going to take it. Well, if you're not into the Mac, we got lots to talk about. We're going to talk about Matt Honan. We had him on Twitter yesterday. Yes,
Chad. If you do want to tie it back to the Mac, the software that the NASA Curiosity Lander is programmed with is VxWorks. Oh. And that is what's in the Airport Extreme as well.
There we go. There you go.
See?
That's a real-time Mac OS, stuff. I guess. Is that what it is?
Going on?
Oh, yeah, Wind Rivers. Yeah, Wind River VxWorks. They've been doing great stuff for a long time. Powers the Mars rover Curiosity.
That's worth the T-shirt for everybody at that company, I think.
Dang.
That's going to show up in the promotional materials.
No kidding. They do amazing stuff.
We think we can keep your beverage bottling plant working okay. If Curiosity landed okay, we think we got you. We're okay.
By the way, our one live studio audience member has just left. So I think it's time to go to a commercial, and we'll come back and talk about the Mac. Really, sir, we'll talk about the Mac. That's when you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't pander to the audience, Leo. It's been
they're walking
you.
Out.
Thank you, Chad.
Now you can finally do the show that you want to do without caring about the audience.
Yes, finally.
You can do your 11 p.m. show.
This is it. There's nobody watching left. Chad Johnson, our producer, thank you, sir.
No, not a problem.
For that contribution. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a word from Citrix. And we're going to talk. I want to talk about this. Apple, I think, is a little bit culpable in this Matt Honan story.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a real cautionary tale. We had Matt on Twit last night, and you should listen to that interview because he's basically hackers got into his iCloud account and wiped his iPhone, his iPad, and his MacBook Air.
Not cool.
Not cool at all. But first, a word from Citrix, the folks who do go to meeting summertime. Means nobody's there. You call a company, they're at the pool, they're on vacation. You're trying to pitch a client. You know, I don't know. He's at home. But now with GoToMeeting, you can meet anywhere you are. You can go home. You can go to the pool. You can enjoy yourself. You can live life a little and still get work done with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting makes online meetings easy. I know you're probably familiar with their screen sharing in GoToMeeting, which is the best. Fast, easy, secure. It uses NAT traversal, so you don't have to open holes in your firewall. That really makes a big difference. It's very easy for your clients to use, too. You send them a meeting invitation in the mail. They click the link. The software downloads in a matter of seconds, runs, and they're in the meeting. It's that easy for them. They don't have to get IT involved or anything. But now, and all of this comes with the newest feature, which is HD Faces. That means with HD Faces, that you can actually have a meeting and they don't have to set up Skype or anything like that. They can see you. This is for companies like, you know, that make the big $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 teleconferencing systems. This must drive them crazy. This makes it so easy and so affordable to have high definition video conferences, even from an iPad. It really looks great. We had an all iPad meeting. You have to start the meeting on a Mac or a PC, but then you can have you can join the meeting on an iPhone or an iPad. On the iPad, it uses your camera, so you can send video as well as receive it. You don't need a phone. It uses the iPad's built-in microphone and speakers, and you're in a meeting.
Yeah, I get so used to virtual meetings now that I get pretty testy when I have to do an in-person meeting.
I know.
Just like, really? You really need me to come there? Because is that really necessary? I mean, do we need to touch each other? Do I have to put my arm around? Right. You know,
I don't understand. I think that's a good point. It's not even just summertime. Nowadays, this is just a way of getting things done faster and easier without travel. I want you to visit GoToMeeting.com and use the promo code MacBreak, and you can sign up for 30 days free. So you don't have to take our word for it. Just put MacBreak in the promo code slot there. 30 days free. It's only $49 a month for as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. So it's a really good deal. And when you compare that to what many companies, you know, I walk by, there's an insurance company near my apartment, and I walk by, and they have one of those big teleconferencing rooms with the cameras, and they've got a big screen and all this stuff. And I think that's, what is it, $100,000? That's a huge amount of money.
It's a lot of money.
And it's...
We've looked at doing one. We've looked at, like, building on a telecom. You know, we've done all that stuff, and then after that, you just realize, after we priced it out, we're like, eventually this is all going to go away.
It's obsolete. Yeah. $49 a month. Go to meeting. Try it. You'll like it. So Matt Honan, who is I've known for a while. He was at Gizmodo. He's now at Wired. He's a part of the Wired Gadget blog. Gadget Lab, they call it. Got hacked the other day. Got hacked Friday. And it was a weird hack. He's playing with his daughter, and all of a sudden his iPhone goes, like, it's like a reset. Like, there's nothing on it. And he thought, that's weird. Maybe it crashed. Then his iPad does it. Then he goes to sit down in his MacBook Air, and it's gone. And it says a pin. It turns out that hackers who weren't even attacking those systems, all they wanted was Matt's, because he has @MAT on Twitter. They said, oh, that'd be cool for the lulz to hack. He's a three-letter Twitter handle. We just want to get in there. But in order to do that, so here, now Matt was on the show on Sunday, but he said, I'm running a story for Wired. I want to get some confirmation, and I want Apple to fix this before I write about it. So, because Apple was very apologetic, and they took his air, and they're apparently trying to do a forensic recovery. I don't know what the status is on that. But now, because he got responses from everybody, he has written the article, How Apple and Amazon Security Flaws Led to My Epic Hacking. It turned out, it was a little social engineering. The hackers on Amazon got two things.
And how did they get on Amazon?
Well, apparently you can see this in some form of fashion publicly, and I'm not sure I even want to talk about how it happens. But all they need... Well, so what they did is they went to Amazon, they got his address, mailing address, and the last four digits of his credit card number. Not the
Which is what it's published everywhere. Like your last four digits are everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Again, social engineering. He called Amazon tech support, customer support, pretending to be him, saying, "Gosh, I want to deposit a new credit card number." And they were basically reading off, "Well, which one do you want? The one that ends in 8214, the one that ends in 4418." You know, like, oh dear. And so with that, that's the first piece of that was the information that Apple was going to use to verify his identity on their own services. And so that was yes.
Apple tech support confirmed to me twice over the weekend, he writes, that all you need to access someone's Apple ID is the associated email address, a credit card number, the billing address, and the last four digits of a credit card on file. So that credit card number does not have to be the same credit card. It could be some other credit card number. But if you have my email address, my billing address, and the last four digits of a credit card, the representative said that's really all you have to do to verify something with us. Apple will then email you a password reset, which they did. The guy immediately went to logged into his iCloud.
And took over.
And from there, boom, 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 because Matt made a bunch of mistakes, which he completely admits. He didn't have backups. He had Gmail. You know, Gmail asked for a second email address. That was his .Mac address. So what they then did is they went to Gmail and said to Gmail, oh, I need a new password that got sent to the iCloud address, which they own. So they got that. And then I'm not sure how they got into Twitter. The article is worth reading. He said, on Monday, Wired tried to verify the hacker's access technique by performing it on a different account. We were successful. Now, I haven't seen a response from Apple, but apparently there's no change. The first thing I did when I read this.
change your password.
No, because it's not. What I did is I changed the credit card that I use on Amazon so that it's not the same as the credit card I use on iCloud. You might also, depending on how you feel, and this Matt said on Twit on Sunday, want to turn off the ability to remotely wipe desktops. I like the idea on a phone. I like the idea on the iPad. Somebody, if I lose my phone or leave it somewhere, I can wipe it. It's easy enough to recover. But when you wipe your desktop or your laptop.
Of course, someone who does a lot of work with a lot of confidential material, I want to be able to remote wipe my desktop.
I know. I thought long and hard, and I did not turn that feature off. It's a little chilling. And I think what it is I think that we're giving the cloud a lot of power. And that power to wipe is especially scary.
You weigh this issue because there are whole services that I don't use because I can't remember the password. I couldn't, until before I got one password and everything else, which I'm now slowly learning how to use. But there were whole services I just can't remember the password and I just stopped using them. I was just enough. You know, and so... I can see the issue is that, you know, if you lose that and you just stop using it, obviously Apple has to have some mechanism that isn't so onerous that you can't get
You can't get your password.
And this is really, and we're going to talk about this with Steve Gibson on Security Now tomorrow. But he's always said, and it's really true, there is a balance between convenience and security.
Mm-hmm.
You give up, if you want security, you're going to give up convenience. If you want convenience, you're going to give up security. And Apple's trying to balance that, I understand. But
and part of it is I think that we are starting to move to a point where someone like me, I would prefer to start using biometric, you know, mechanisms for certain computers like that I don't want to connect to.
A good solution would be, and this is what I've, is to either two-factor authentication, where mm-hmm. and I love this, right. And my bank uses, a lot of companies use this, where you need something you know and something you have, or right. something you are, which is biometrics, and you need two of the three. In this case, Google, you can turn on two-factor authentication where you know your Google password, but you also will get from the Google Authenticator on your phone a second number that you will use to right. verify. And that's great. And my bank uses that. Problem is it's a pain in the butt on Google because a lot of like apps, for instance, don't know anything about two-factor authentication. So they have to generate a one-time password.
Well, and the thing is that when you look at like facial recognition, for instance, you know,
it doesn't work that well, believe me.
So it doesn't work that well when it actually – so. Number one, iPhoto works surprisingly well. When you think about it, it's looking at thousands of images.
I have face recognition. Maybe it's an Android problem. But I have it on this. It doesn't work.
But iPhoto works surprisingly well given it's getting multiple angles with lots of different people, with lots of different lighting conditions, with lots of, you know, if all it has to do is say it's you or not, it'll get real accurate real quick. You know, like, you know, that's, you know, if it's only like I hold it up and I go, click, it's you, that doesn't, your face doesn't change that fast.
Well, but the thing is, if the only thing this algorithm is supposed to be able to do is say that face looks exactly like Andy and Otko's, God forbid, that's right. good enough for what iPhoto needs to do. If it's meant to say this user is the user who is authorized to access this data, then it's nowhere near good enough.
Well, but I think, when you reduce the number of variables that it has to manage, right now it's trying to manage lots of different angles, lots of different lighting conditions, lots of different people. If it only has to manage a handful of, you know, like one image, like it is a Boolean. It looks like this person or not. And it's going to keep on adding to those samples every time you do it. You're going to get to a point where it'd be pretty darn accurate. Now, if it's two or three, basically says you can use your biometric and your code and you're in. If your biometric for some reason doesn't work, then you have to have it text your phone or something like that. Like I would love to have that as an option.
So Phobia, who's the hacker who did this, and by the way, this is how Matt knows how it happened, is he talked to the hacker. Mm-hmm. The hacker contacted him. And it wasn't because Matt was well known. The hacker said, no, I don't have no idea who you are. It was because he had a three-letter Twitter. That was it. And the guy wanted to, you know, mess with it. Phobia said, you can get into any email associated with Apple. And then once you – so there are a couple of lessons. First of all, don't – you know, be careful. I would say pick a very – maybe have a special account for email verification. Mm-hmm. And make sure – you got to think about how they're interlocking. Because what happened is once they got Apple, it was all over because everything went into the .Mac or the iCloud mm-hmm. account. Right.
Right.
So how did he get the vital information? He says he began with the easy one. He got the billing address by doing a whois on his web domain.
Ugh.
So whois privacy would be a good thing, right? If someone doesn't have a web domain, you can also look up his or her information on Spokio, which is a really creepy site. But this is all public record.
Mm-hmm.
If you've bought a house, it's public record. If you've donated to a campaign, a political campaign, it's public record. A lot of the things that we do put this information, and in the past you've had to go to a courthouse and said, I want the public record. Now it's all online because mm-hmm. companies like Spokio actually send people to the courthouse and record all this stuff and then put it in their database. Getting a credit card number is trickier, but also relies on the advantage of a company's back-end systems. Phobia says that a partner performed this part of the hack, and it was what we described. You call Amazon, tell them you're an account holder. You want to add a credit card number. By the way, this is, as far as I know, this has now all been exposed as a technique, and none of these companies have changed how they work.
We're just now we're in a very scary...
So now we're in this horrible state.
Yeah.
Right.
It's that isn't that always the question? I mean, I don't have the ability to look into the souls of the people who perpetrated this. But every time this sort of thing happens, you sort of try to see if there's an upside at all to it. And sometimes it is that it hopefully will inspire a lot of people to do audits of how they manage their own financial information about their own passwords. I myself spent last night, the night before, going through like every single service that I subscribe to that might have a credit card number on file and trying to remember, oh, look, there's that one. I found one that, oh, God, that's using a password that I was brand new 4 years ago, but I have since used on a couple of other places. So I changed that password. It really is a lesson that it's not so much about trusting or not trusting the security of any one website or any one service or company. It's wondering if one company will give away one tiny harmless piece of information that when you couple it to another tiny harmless little piece of information that another company is giving up and to another third one and then a tiny little security hole that could never be vulnerable, that wouldn't be then vulnerable in a million years. But now that you have three pieces of information that click together so beautifully well, that's how basically all of your security is completely torn down.
Yeah. I feel that Apple is still the one that needs to change its policies, because basically if you have an address, an email address, and the last four digits of a credit card, and by the way, Matt points out that if you, anytime you call Pizza Hut and order a pizza for delivery,
you're giving them that
information.
Yeah, right.
That if that's all you need to compromise an Apple account, Apple needs to change that policy stat. Well, Apple did not have anything to share by press time. So I don't know if there was
something in that one of those articles that said that Apple had responded, that said they take it seriously and they're working on they're looking at what they did, and there was not, and according to them, certain things weren't followed. But who knows? I mean, they did respond at this point, but they didn't say they had done anything yet.
I think it's pretty clear, though, that this ruined everybody's Monday at Apple. There are a lot of people who are now scrambling to figure out what went wrong, how to fix it, because Apple is not so stupid as to simply think that issuing a half a paragraph explanation for a Wired article is going to be everything the public wants. I'm sure that they're preparing a full-out solution for this and a full-out tech note, if not just an open letter saying, here's how we've made security tighter on the Apple Store. Because this could be, if a lesser company that doesn't appreciate how scary this is for ordinary consumers would let this be their Waterloo. I don't think Apple is that stupid, though.
The saddest thing, he's talking to Phobia the Hacker, and the hacker says, yeah, I am really a nice guy. I don't know why I do some of the things I do. This is on AIM. I don't know. My goal is to get it out there to other people so eventually everyone can overcome hackers.
Mm-mm. Yeah, because part of this was that, you know, he has a newborn baby. All the photos were on the wiped device that he had never backed up, so he lost every photo and video.
Because he had backed it up to the cloud, right? He had it all backing up to the cloud. Is that right?
I believe the article said that he had no backups anywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he wasn't backing it up. The problem is, and Matt said this on Sunday, it's just too easy to wipe the hard drive. And that's the real problem, is that once you wipe the hard drive. Now, Matt should have had backups, and Matt copped to that. And everybody listening, I'm hoping that among all the changes you make, another one is to back it up.
Right.
And maybe not just to iCloud. Okay.
No, yeah. never just. iCloud is a convenience service. It's not a backup solution, in my opinion. You really do need to have a copy of Super Duper, which costs you absolutely nothing. You need to have a physical hard drive, which will cost you almost the cost of two moderately priced dinners at a downtown restaurant. I mean, the cost of a 256 gigabyte hard drive is almost nothing these days comparatively. And so you need to have that physical backup on a physical drive that you can plug in and then detach and then put into a locked drawer, because you're not just worried about what happens if someone tries to remote wipe your device. You have to worry about what happens if someone grabs this thing and runs away with it and you can't get it back again. They're probably not going to rifle through. They're probably not going to find the locked drawer that you locked this pocket drive in. They're certainly not going to find it in your safety deposit box, which is where a lot of my data goes. That's ultra important once a month. So
well, the stuff that's really important, to me, the stuff that's really important to me is in two physical locations and in the cloud. Like, it's not necessarily iCloud.
I've mentioned this all the time, and I'm just going to point people to this one more time because...
Best Flow, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So our good friend, Peter Krogh, who's a great photographer, is also an expert on digital asset. He wrote the digital asset management book, the damn book. He has worked with the American Society of Media Photographers and the Library of Congress to create this website, dpbestflow.org. It's about photography workflow, and by the way, a great site. But if you go to best practices and you go to backup... He describes what he calls his 3-2-1 backup, and really, you should read this. I know it seems complicated. The fundamental thing is you should have three copies of everything. Deleting the original means you have two copies. You should have three copies of everything, two of them on different kinds of media, and finally one of them should be off-site so that if the house burns down, they're gone. Yeah. That's very simple. 3, 2, 1. But read the whole thing. And backup is not trivial. And if you've got pictures of your kids in one place, I don't care if it's on a MacBook Air or a hard drive. You said that. You're the one who told me this. One copy of anything
doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was also interesting that it wasn't like he had a long interview with the hacker, but it really took me back to when I was a teenager. And if this guy was anything like me, he's not violent. He's not mean. He's not a psychopath. There's nothing really horrible about his nature. His interface with the person that he's harming is a keyboard and a screen that does not have human emotions, does not have human expression. I admit that as a teenager, I did a small amount of trespassing myself. In ways of figuring out, well, let's see what happens if I put this number into the modem. Oh, wow. Well, I bet that there is an account that's actually open so I could see what's on this machine. And I never changed any data, never deleted anything. I never left any trace that I was there. But it's when you're 13 or 14, it's hard to appreciate that you have done some damage, even if you left without a trace. If someone found out that someone went into your house, then left without touching anything, just that fact alone disturbs their knowledge of what had happened. And if someone said, we want to make sure that he doesn't change his password back. The only way to do that is to make sure we wipe his hard drive so he can't have the tools he needs to do that. I think that given another 6 months of experience on the planet, he would have realized, oh, wait, no, that's going way, way beyond. That will really, really cause damage we don't intend to do. It's so important not to forget that just because we know people through user IDs and avatars and cool three-letter handles, those are real people, and we are touching real people. Yeah. And we have to never abstract away someone's humanity.
It's one of the unfortunate things about the internet is that does happen. You know, when you're in a chat room or you're on a forum or you're tweeting or you're hacking, it's very easy to forget there's somebody else on the other, a real person on the other side. Waz actually is quoted today in an article at ZDNet. By David Meyer. Waz says, I was wrong. I really worry about everything going to the cloud. I think it's going to be horrendous. I think there are going to be a lot of horrible problems in the next 5 years. And what he's mostly concerned about is not data loss. He's worried about with the cloud, he says, you don't own anything. You've already signed it away.
Yeah.
Another issue entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I myself have a great difficulty managing all these great cloud services because, you know, let's be really bizarre. Let's say I meet George Lucas. We hit it off and George Lucas says, here's my private personal phone number, my private personal email address. Just don't let this get out. I change it every three or four weeks. And whoever screws up, they don't get the new one. And I would be so worried about, well, what do I do with this? I can't put it in my phone because that's going to be synced up to iCloud. If someone gets access to my account, they could possibly sync it back down. I can't put it on my Android phone because that's also going to be synced up to a cloud service where I don't have physical control over that data. Am I going to have to write this down in sort of a Jeffersonian code on a card in my wallet every time I want to email my close personal friend George Lucas, so I make sure that this incredibly personal and private piece of information can never be compromised without my doing something horrendously stupid. It's a problem that comes when you design these systems for the 75%, for the 85%, because I think there are most people who are not cheating on their wives or husbands don't have certain entries in their address book that they never, ever, 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 ever want synced up to a cloud or put onto another device. But there are a lot of people who are in that sort of position where there is a certain percentage of their calendar, a certain percentage of their address book, a certain percentage of their documents where it's absolutely crucial that they know they can tell somebody, they can tell the person they're contracting with that, nope, I have had physical control over this confidential report at all times. It has never been backed up to a cloud. It has never been put onto a server where anybody could possibly breach and access it. And as we're moving towards these operating systems that are designed to put things into the cloud, again, that works great for 75% of the people who don't have any information that's particularly confidential or who never would ever be a target of anybody with malicious intent. But for the other 25%, for the other 20%, whatever that number is, this is a huge problem with no obvious solutions. Well, maybe it's for me to go get my Z80 CPM box out of the closet.
Well, the big issue is the what the
ramifications for someone's friends. I mean, this is something you touched on in Twit, was, you know, on Sunday, was that, you know, man, once someone hacks into one account, the ability to spoof everybody else, you know, and for that to chain react. I mean, fortunately, I think that it doesn't sound like this guy was you know, ready to exploit this at a level that
he could have though.
Been. And he may have. The thing is, we don't even know yet. I mean, yeah. There could be a whole bunch of his friends that suddenly have their accounts drained.
I really feel for Matt. This is just... Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, well, boy, there's a lot to talk about. Apple, Samsung, the trial is on last week. Some big revelations, some surprises, some admissions.
This lawsuit has been awesome.
This has been great.
Yeah, this is the best.
This is juicy. Yeah. I don't really like patent lawsuits, but I have to admit, every once in a while, the same thing happened with Microsoft Department of Justice 12 years ago. Right. There was some good stuff. So we got some good stuff coming up in just a little bit. Also more iPhone 5 rumors and more. But first, and I'm not, you know what? Chad, I'm not going to do it. Because I don't want to, you know, Chad said, this would be a good place for a Carbonite commercial. But I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. We'll save the Carbonite commercial for later. I'll talk about Hover.com. Actually, you know, this is germane because if you register your domains at Hover.com, they give you Whois privacy as part of the deal. Because they know that actually is something you want. So many of those other registrars, when you say, I want a domain, and then there's 800 pages of, well, would you like this? Maybe you like that. One of those things is Whois privacy, and you have to pay extra for it. Not at Hover.com. It's built in. Hover is domain name registration and management. I really should say that.
You know, I started using Hover when they started advertising on the show. Mm-hmm. I'll give them a shot, and I can't go back. I mean, it's just
clean. Yeah, it's simple. It's right.
Yeah.
And I have to say,
so easy.
They don't use scantily clad women in their advertising. And I know that sounds, but I'm kind of glad about that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I know.
I'm just glad. I you know, I don't want to throw them under the bus or anything, but just glad. Hover.com. If you go to macbreak.hover.com, you can find out more about what Hover will do. For instance, the next time you want to, you know, get a domain, just go over to Hover. You'll see they have all the big TLDs, .com.net. Also .co, .ca, .org. A lot of country-specific ones, which are very handy. .it, .asia, .es, .us, .de, and even .pro, .xxx, and .tv, that we use .tv a lot. Great policy for customer service. I really like this. They will not, if you went, you know, call them during business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, they will not put you on hold. They'll just, and everybody who tells me that they've moved to Hover, and I get a lot of tweets and emails, say the customer service was really, really good. Now, if you need a domain, use our offer code MacBreak, and you will get 10% off the domain. On standard domain names, 10% off. Great for email. Everybody should have one of the things that this also helps is that I have a single domain that is my domain, and I can use Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Hotmail, or a variety of email services and forward my mail from that main domain, which is registered at Hover.com, to any of those services. And I can change that forwarding anytime I want. And that gives me some great flexibility. Plus, my email address never changes to the people I care for. They know that it's, you know, not going to change. Lots of good reasons to use Hover. Give it a try. Great management, too. If you're a MacBreak Weekly listener, you're going to get 10% off Hover.com. Just go to MacBreak.Hover.com or use the offer code MacBreak. I finally unlocked the domains that were locked in at the other place, and I think I've got them all moved over now, finally. I should have just used Hover's concierge service. By the way, if you're moving domains, ask them about that. That's a great deal. In fact, just mention my name. I think they will waive the fee. It's $25 for however many domains you want, but I think they'll waive that. If you said, hey, Leo said waive it, they'll say, oh, Leo, well, all right. Okay. This is actually a breaking story. Maybe we'll do this first. No YouTube app in iOS 6. Mm. So there are three Google things in iOS. Maps, YouTube, and the last one is search. And I have to think that when we see iOS 6, maybe Google will not be the default search anymore.
That's a hard one, but I think that Google spent a lot of time trying to get people to move over to their YouTube HTML5 version, you know, to the web version. There was a couple years ago where there was a lot of push.
Apple
like,
hasn't updated that app in ages.
Well, yeah. Google hasn't. It's Google's app.
No.
No, it isn't?
It's Apple's app.
No, but it's licensed from Google. And, yeah, it hasn't been updated. And, but Google spent a lot of time trying to get you onto their web version. And the rumor is that they actually, the licensing ran out and Google didn't update the license. Apple didn't take it out. Google didn't update the license. And so, because it's
Google
Google's
is working
best
on
interest.
On a new version. Yeah, for iOS 6.
Yes.
But you will have to actively download it.
Well, and it's in Google's best interest to have you using a, you know, going through a web browser or through one that they can punch ads into. Because right now, the YouTube one
ads.
That you get on your iOS doesn't allow them to run ads, which is, you know, not Google's way.
Apple did confirm YouTube will continue to work in Safari. So you've not lost YouTube. You just that app, which hasn't been updated in a while.
And for the record, Apple has never had a problem with allowing Google to create good third party apps and to put them into the App Store.
Right.
Google
Voice.
Well, that's there now.
But
there's Currents and there's
all the other Google apps. Including Chrome. To Apple's credit, yeah. Chrome.
Yeah, remember how we always thought that when Apple started the App Store, the big gotcha that it seemed to be in the developer agreement was that you can't, it will never approve an app that competes with a built-in app that's built into the operating system. And now that seems to have been either tabled completely or at least something that they will haul out only for the most extreme examples. Because now you want a different email client, you want a different web browser, you want a different search engine, no problem. We'll let you do any of that sort of stuff. And I think I just think this is a good move for both companies. I'm sure that Google, in addition to wanting to serve ads, I'm sure that it sort of offended them that the YouTube app on the iOS, on one of the predominant phone in the United States and one of the predominant phones in the entire world, was just such a 2008
just feel that way
era effort. Yeah. Just was not it didn't show off the service as good as Google could promote it. So now Google has a chance to just dive right in and make it as good as the Android version of the player.
Yeah. Of course, the reason that I use the YouTube, I actually use the YouTube player a lot, is because it didn't have any ads.
Yeah.
it was like a quick way to
use it personally or for your kids.
No, personally, no, I turn it off for my kids. I don't let my kids go to YouTube.
What, you got something against crutch shots?
What happens is that Malachi plays he plays Angry Birds a lot. He's gotten really good at it for a 4-year-old. I mean, he's really good.
It's pretty cool.
And
he's learning physics, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So he plays Angry Birds.
He's going to be a launch engineer at NASA. Well, next.
I'm teaching him to fly one of those little helicopters now. So anyway, but then I didn't even know there were YouTube videos that were connected to Angry Birds. Like I just never.
Yeah, yeah.
But somewhere in the interface,
every level.
But somewhere in the interface, you can click on it. It'll take you to YouTube videos about Angry Birds. And then once he's in YouTube, then within 3 or 4 minutes, the iPad is screaming profanity. Like you know, like whatever the ones that are kind of like Angry Birds, they're angry. And so the thing is that he just starts clicking on the other movies. And
Daddy,
before you know it, there's like
birds?
MF, blah, blah, blah. Like his iPad is like screaming profanity. So we had to turn
they
off.
They kind of kept YouTube family friendly. I guess not.
No, there's no sexual content. But that's – and no one –
There's lots of swearing. So Nathan Ingraham, writing on The Verge, says, Engadget has also heard from Apple and learned that while iOS 6 devices will lose the YouTube app, iOS 5 devices will not. Apparently, licensing allows that. Interesting.
So it goes back to a licensing agreement.
Yep. And Google says, yes, they will be working. We are working with Apple to ensure that we have the best possible YouTube experience for iOS users. Don't know what that means.
Well, and they're working really hard on it. I mean, a lot of these iOS apps, I mean, if you look at like the G Plus app, it is the best social platform app out there. Yeah. I mean, it is so silky.
Yeah.
So the search app has a feature that I'd love to see as a standard feature on the iOS keyboard, where if you're sort of in the back of a cab, you don't have the sort of digital dexterity to type what you're searching, you can actually draw the letters in big fat letters in the middle of the search window, and we'll just take it letter by letter and put that into the search box. Google is not is certainly using the iOS platform as if pride, simple pride, isn't involved. It's a way for Google to say, hey, look, we can make cool software too. It's not like Apple has a lock on making cool software.
No, in fact, I agree with you. G+ is amazing. Xcode 4.5, developer preview 4, and iOS 6 beta 4 now released to developers. Does that mean we're getting close to an iOS 6? This is the fourth beta.
Closer.
Closer.
We have to be close.
I figure my guess is that iOS 6 is going to get released September
4. Oh.
Yeah. Or actually September, maybe September 12th. Wait, no, 11th. Wait, 12th, 11th, 10th, 9th.
1 week, you're saying 7th. Five days before the announcement.
September 7th. Definitely.
Why?
It's the Friday before. So you go through and let everybody upgrade, and then you launch it. Or it could happen any time the week after, but it'll happen September. I think that they're trying to get it all ready to go. With the iPhone 5 and whatever else they're going to do, they're going to want to upgrade it for that. You know, I'm sure that there'll be things that are specific to that. So that's probably the range that they're trying to hit.
Definitely September 7th.
Definitely. Watch if it gets right. If it's right, you have a great highlight.
Or the
9th,
or maybe the 5th. Definitely no later than the 13th, unless it's the 16th.
Yes. Sometime between now and December.
And, by the way, in this beta 4, the simulator now goes to 1136. 640 by 1136.
Interesting.
That's the simulator.
That means nothing. That could be anything. Balderdash, we're irresponsible to pass along such rampant and irresponsible speculation.
Goes to 1136. That's
weird resolution.
And that is, by the way, though, what everybody thought. If you were going to, right?
If you were to keep the width the same and make a 4-inch screen,
right?
I don't remember the exact number, but that's close to what the number I think is supposed to be.
Mid-May, in fact, it was that 9 to 5 Mac reported the next generation iPhone would feature a 3.999-inch display. This is in May, with 1136 by 640. And in fact, now that is a simulation in the SDK for that's pretty good. You know what?
Well played.
Not quite like landing Curiosity on Mars,
right?
But pretty good prediction.
Yeah.
From May. Well done.
Yeah, but notice they hedged by saying 3.999. It's almost as if they had a source who told them 4, and then they decided to conceal his identity by fudging the number a little bit so Apple wouldn't catch on.
By the way, the subhead on this is updated. More decimals. this just in. More decimals. I don't know. 3.999. That's what, 1/1000th of an inch?
Yeah, you know. It would have been another pixel. It would have screwed the whole thing up.
Oh, I guess.
Would you like one more pixel? It's only 1/1000. Couldn't put another pixel on the screen at all.
Does your pixel bite? 176 pixels taller. Thank you very much.
Yes.
It doesn't, though. It's not a 2X or anything, is it? It's not any easy ratio. Is it?
No.
It's close to 16.9.
It's interesting. I admit to being... I'm sure it's important that Apple, more than any other company, it's not just enough to know that they've ordered this component or that this thing will have an extra feature. Like if near field communication is part of the new iPhone, if it's in a Samsung phone, Samsung will put it out there and let third party Android apps support it, and they support it very, very well. With Apple, it's not just the fact they put a near field communication chip in or they made the screen longer; it's the explanation they give you of why they decided to make it longer. So I have to admit that I don't know yet what reason Apple is going to give for why they decided now of all times to make it longer. It's possible that they were just going to say display technology has come a long way since we designed the first iPhone. We figured out that we could make a larger display with a little bit that made movies, widescreen movies, a little bit more luxurious to watch without affecting the compact size of the iPhone that we think is a main asset of the size of the device. So we decided, what the hell, let's go ahead and do it.
Well, it is going to fill up at that rate.
Of course, we are taking the risk that the next iPhone will be an incredibly major hot seller with this new feature, but that's just a risk we're going to have to take.
By the way, this goes back to an even earlier post. Thank you to the chat room for pointing this out from the Verge forums by a guy named Model War on April 9th, which I remember seeing this, and I don't know if we reported it on it. I think I might have rejected it because it was just too kind of far-fetched, in which he goes through quite a bit of logic to come up with 640 by 1136. So...
And this is proportional, so it's 16:9, which means that when you're watching movies on it, you will, or whatever, that are 16:9, you won't have that annoying
strip on the top and the bottom.
And as he does point out, you get one more, Dan pointed this out too, one more row of icons.
Awesome. That's what I need.
That's all I was asking for. If I got one more row of icons, that's what I was looking for. Apple, according to Renee Ritchie at iMore, who's been on a roll lately, will roll out the new dock connector across the entire lineup on September 12th. So it won't just be an iPhone 5. It will include the 7-inch iPad mini and the current iPad. Why? And I always thought, that's strange. Why change the connector on one if you still got a 30-pin on the other?
Right.
Now we know the answer.
They don't want to make any more. I mean, you know, they're going to want to just
30-pin
okay,
is
done.
Dead, according to Renee.
I have so many 30-pins. That's all I want to say.
Hey, I'm not going to say any more because people think I'm a whiny little toad. So I'm not going to say any more. You can do the whining for me when this happens.
I have so many 30-pins. I'm whining for you.
Thank you.
I have so many 30-pin
Thank you.
Cables.
I'm tired of whining.
It'll be fine.
Web 3532, again, with another great link. This is from valuewalk.com, the iPod dock connector to mini dock connector converter, $9.99. This looks like an Apple page in white or black.
Maybe.
Still won't fit on my...
I guess you could just get... But the problem is you can put $10 to upgrade all your $30 cables to something that you can use.
I think that's a fake.
Is that a store page or is it a...
It's a Photoshop is what it is.
Yeah. Well, because we do know that a lot of stores, when they say, oh, we've got a screenshot of an unpublished page from Best Buy or whatever, oftentimes they will... do a placeholder SKU for a product they think is going to ship, but they don't know yet. And they'll put a place because no one is going to, they think no one's going to see it. It's okay for them to put a dummy image just to, so that's there for maintenance. But yeah, it's looking pretty good.
G McCourt in our chat room says, oh, it's obviously a fake. They spelled color with a U.
Oh, there you go.
Hey,
also a white adapter after Labor Day. I don't think so.
Never.
That's not the stylish Johnny Ive that I grew up with.
Sprint cutting the phone iPhone 4S price to $149. You'd expect this across the board soon, right?
As we get that closer. Everyone will be really mad when they get when the iPhone 5 comes out and they realize they just bought the wrong phone.
Do you think they're selling any iPhone 4Ss right now?
No one listening to this show is buying a 4S, I don't think.
I don't know. I mean, I know a couple of people who bought iPhones because they're not that interested in the next model, and this is about the time they need a new phone for school, or they have a 6-week window in which they can buy a new phone, and they're not exactly tearing their hair off of the idea that they're not going to get the next iPhone.
All right, we've got to do this.
Phones are weird.
Phones are weird.
A lot of people think of them as practical, functional devices as opposed to something that they're going to put part of their soul into.
People are strange.
My wife's like that. She's like, whatever.
Phones are weird.
She had a Razor for a long time. I had to rip the thing in half before I could buy her an iPhone.
We know that.
I won't give up the iPhone.
After our straw poll from two weeks ago? That 58% of our audience is waiting for the next iPhone.
What is wrong with
for some reason.
Are using Symbian. There's a lot of people using Symbian.
Or other. I should have put other.
My trio is working great.
Let's take a break. I do want to talk about Apple, Samsung. But first, before we do this, Text Expander 4 is here, and I really love it. I will not use a Macintosh unless Text Expander is on it. And the new Text Expander 4 makes it even more fantastically useful. This is actually a feature that I spent a lot of time perfecting in my DOS batch files. The ability to do a fill-in snippet. So I just love Text Expander. Let me see how I could do
it. So it's like a keystroke and then you type something?
It pauses and says, what would you like? Yeah.
That's awesome.
What would you like to fill in here? It really is not an apt description at all, but it just reminds me of that. SmileSoftware.com/MacBreak Text Expander. You know what's fun? I probably isn't much on this computer because I have just recently updated it, but it will show you your statistics of how many keystrokes. So I should explain what this does. So what Text Expander does is when you type something, it will expand it. So you can say, for instance, when I type address and hit tab, I want you to put my address in. If I type dear and you and hit tab, then you will type dear and then I can fill in the name. See, that's the pause. And then it'll put the comma and then put the rest of the entire letter in if it's always the same letter. In other words, you'll get the idea.
Now, thanks so much. I'm really glad you listened to the show. And
yeah. Yeah. I have one or two of those. Yeah. We thank you for your feedback. Now go away. Now this is, and this is a machine that I don't use all the time. This is just my show machine. 49 snippets expanded, 924 characters saved, hours saved, 0.04 hours at 80 words per minute. I love that. And I can tweet my stats. So here's some of the email boilerplates. I have quite a few of them. Some of them do have, and I love this, for instance, here's 1% clipboard. We'll insert the contents of the clipboard.
Oh, nice.
So all I do is I type ahref tab, and we'll take whatever URL is on the clipboard and make it a link. I mean, this is so insanely powerful. There's variables. So here's the current time. So if I type time tab, it'll put the exact time of day in there. And then there's a, you know, thanks for writing, go away, that kind of stuff. I love these. These save me so much time. I am
for me, it's really also accuracy. Like when I use it a lot with my address. So I get a lot of stuff sent to me, and some people are like, "What address should I send this to you?" And I just hit, you know, I type my little code in, and boom, it's the whole address.
And it's always, you know, right. And it has all the things you want.
Our FTP servers are where we put up movies and stuff. I hit it, because otherwise you mistype it, and then everyone's
exactly. I do that all the time. Yeah. I use, there are a number of different, you can subscribe to other people's libraries. So there's a Tidbits autocorrects library,
nice,
which I subscribe to. So it fixes all of the common misspellings for like absolutely ridiculous, all the things that I never spell right. This is fantastic.
I just want to say, when I type ridiculous, I just wanted to change it to redonkulous.
You could do
automatically.
That.
Automatically. I'm
wait
just going
to
set that.
Wait a minute. You want to do that? I'll set that up here. Watch. From now on, whenever I type ridiculous, it's going to say redonkulous.
So if you get an email from Leo, say this is all redonkulous. You'll know that he meant ridiculous, but it just said redonkulous.
That's a good snippet. So I'm telling you, this is a great program, and anybody who has a Mac should. In fact, there are plenty of PC people who go, "Oh, I really want that." Nope, got to have a Mac for it. Go to textexpander.com/MacBreak. And find out what the new version 4 can do. Yes, of course, there's a free trial. $35 to buy, but you got a free, I think, 30-day trial. Take a look at this video on here. David Sparks did a video on Mac Sparky on how the new Text Expander 4 fill-in features work, because they're really, really great. Registered users can upgrade for $15 or free if you bought it after January 15th. So if you're a Text Expander user, make sure you upgrade to the new version 4. Can't buy it in the App Store because of sandboxing, but you can get it from smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. It is a must.
Gotta have it.
Fantastic. I put it on every computer.
And it's on the App Store?
And I have been for years. No, it's not on the App Store.
Is it not on the App Store?
Sandboxing.
No. The other one I have. I have the PDF Pen Pro.
Yeah. They put stuff in the App Store.
Yeah, they do.
Can.
They
and
that one,
and
that one's
I'm pretty
outside of
sure. You know, I should see.
That's not sandboxed.
Right. I should see just if the. I'm pretty sure they have a certificate. Yeah. So they have a certificate, so you can just download it and install it, even if you have the higher security settings on here.
The PDF Pen Pro, by the way, is really cool too. We're not talking about
must have. We're not selling it today. But if you're you happen to be at smilesoftware.com, check it out.
We love it. I love it.
smilesoftware.com/MacBreak.
Leo, one quick update. I just checked the Twitter feed. Apparently, according to Wired, Amazon has closed the loophole that allowed that hack to happen. So they haven't announced it or anything, but it's no longer possible for you to call Amazon and add a credit card number or get those four numbers off of the account.
Well done, Amazon. Quick feat. You know, that's a really hard thing to do for a big company, is to suddenly change a whole bunch of policies overnight.
It is.
And they did.
Notice that Apple has still not moved.
They're not.
No, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are
thinking on it.
Damn it. my kid was gonna like be first to our varsity soccer today, and I can't.
Somebody's staying home.
I mean, you're Apple, you're geniuses. I'm sure you got someone over there thinking things up and someone backing them up.
My brother-in-law didn't see his kids for 4 days because he was landing a Voyager on the planet Mars. why am I staying at the office for 3 days? Oh, to fix a bug in our store. Oh, good. That's just as good.
Security's hard, and I, you know, it's hard. Let's just face it. Let's talk Samsung. Been waiting for this one. So we did this on Twitter. What was your favorite revelation in the Samsung Apple trial? The latest one is that Apple does in fact do product placement, lots of it, because they kind of implied no.
I was kind of surprised that people don't realize that.
Well, you see them everywhere. But
they have a great program. I've been the beneficiary of some of those programs. Those are awesome.
I think the distinction is I don't think Apple has to pay anybody. So for instance, when you're CSI Las Vegas and you want laptops, you can go to HP,
right,
and they will pay you to have HP laptops. And you see this all the time. You can go to Apple and they'll say, I don't think we'll pay you. They might give you some.
Yeah, so they have a pretty good program as far as providing filmmakers and so on and so forth.
Mostly it's for movie stars.
Well, movie stars, but also but filmmakers.
I told Steve Martin, I said, you don't need to buy those anymore. Right.
But you can get great loaners and you can get great deals on them and stuff like that as a filmmaker, because obviously they want to have that placement. You can tell which producers really want to get paid for it, because you'll see a Mac laptop with that silver sticker on over top of the Apple, which has meant the producer had a conversation with Apple saying, I want to get paid for this, and Apple said no, and then they just put a sticker over it like, screw you.
Right.
Or they'll paint it out. Alias, I think they used to, the TV show, I think they used to actually, I think that actually got painted out, like you could see it in like a post or whatever. So, there was a lot of, that's been an old program. I mean, they've been interacting with filmmakers for a decade or more.
In fact, I'm sure there are iPhones, iPods.
And every company does that, by the
way. iPads in Academy Award presenter baskets and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, and the thing is that every company tries to get product placement. It's just that Apple has cooler
Wasn't
stuff.
It the case, and I didn't watch 24, but wasn't it the case that the bad guys on 24 ran Windows and the good guys ran Macs?
I think that was the case.
Was that not the case?
And a lot of times, because so many people in Hollywood, I mean, you go to Hollywood, you don't see a PC anywhere. Like in the production staff, the people who are designing the shows, you never see a PC anywhere. It's all Apple. So the thing is they're already on their side. And so a lot of times they're quite willing to, just write it into the thing because they think it's cool. They're excited to have the Mac there.
Andy, what do they use on Big Bang Theory?
Actually, they use a variety of machines. Raj, I believe, uses a MacBook. Only there's a small sticker above the bite in the Apple, so it's not technically an Apple logo. Sheldon uses I believe he's using Ubuntu on a Dell.
Yes.
I think.
Of course, and Sheldon's using Ubuntu. Of course,
can't remember what Leonard's doing, what Leonard's using, but they do use a very free dispersal of machines on there, which I really really like.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to do. Somebody's pointing out, and this is true. At the end of 30 Rock, it says promotional consideration provided by Apple computers. So that's this is not a revelation.
Well, I mean, the thing is that
you got to imagine that part of it is wanting to have a little bit of control over how the product is used.
Right.
I still have to cite the worst product placement of any computer in the past 5 years, maybe 10 years, maybe forever, was in Sex and the City 2, where Samantha has like a big beautiful office in the middle of Times Square, has a big beautiful HP touchscreen computer. You know, HP does some really nice things with like Windows 7 touchscreen stuff, and so she answers a phone call by like reaching over and tapping a button that says, accept call from the phone number. Here's the ID, which would have been a wonderful demonstration of the product, if not for the fact that she had just 1 second later been using that exact same hand to rub a hormonal cream into certain parts of her. Exactly. And it wasn't done as a joke or anything. I think the filmmaker just didn't think that one through. And you see this HP guy, it's going to be the hottest movie. Oh my God,
we've got estrogen.
Here's $1.8 million. Can you please add an Asus logo to that device?
That's a good point. You don't know how it's going to be used.
But you also have, like, if Apple's taking care of a production, or anybody's taking care of a production,
they have rules.
Well, you also start thinking about it as a because you were really happy to have that. And it's not just Apple, it's whoever's supplying it.
Right.
But we've had conversations about, like, we've had jib shots where when it comes down, we want to make sure that it just grazes across so that you see the Apple logo go across the bottom. That's on the back of the computer. And Apple's not asking us to do that, but but the producer's obviously going, well, we're really happy that we're friends.
Right.
Let's stay friends by just that. Because that's easy. Like it goes down, and that's an easy gimme to let it just go down just a little bit further and have that work. And so but it's everything.
On the other hand, if you're Sony Pictures, you pretty much make sure there's a VAIO.
Do the best you can.
In every shot.
You try.
Apple has, the judge Koh has decided that Samsung cannot use a clip from 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Copyright violation.
No, no. It's actually more complicated than that. But remember, we've talked about this, that there is something that looks a lot like a tablet in this movie that came out in 1969.
I thought that was a big blow for Samsung, because I think that the big case that they have to make that they have on their side is that what Apple calls a distinctive and unique design element is just, here is how everybody always imagined a slate computer would be. If someone who has no knowledge of what computing would be like in 2010 imagines what a slate computer would look like, they come up with something that looks exactly like the iPad. So
it's complicated. It isn't that she doesn't think that that's germane. It just has to do with the fact that, I don't know, it's timing or something. It's a legal thing.
Right.
You can read FOSS patents for yourself. Judge prohibits invalidity arguments based on both 2001 and Tomorrow People, saying it that they had that Samsung was kind of changing its tune. Let me read the germane quote from 9 to 5. I can understand 9 to 5 Mac better than FOSS patents.
Smaller words.
Smaller words.
Less syllables.
Samsung did not, however, argue that these references supported an invalidity or non-infringement theory in previous conversations. This was during the preliminary injunction phase. That Samsung changed tack after the close of fact discovery to include these references in their invalidity theories likely prejudiced Apple, who was not made aware during the preliminary injunction proceedings that Samsung intended to rely on these two prior art references. So, in other words, basically, Samsung's lawyers screwed up,
or they decided, that I don't know whether they screwed up or not. Maybe they did it on purpose. Well, no. They changed direction, so that's clear.
Right.
And that happens a lot in the case where you change your argument somewhere along the case because you realize that whatever
one's
argument,
not good,
like during discovery.
Well, they lost
discovery.
The preliminary injunction phase, so. Maybe that's why.
Okay, that didn't work. Let's try something else. But the problem is that, and the way a lot of the legal stuff works is that you can't bring new stuff. Oftentimes, you can't bring new stuff in, you know, past that. Like, for instance, if you get an appeal, you can only appeal the things oftentimes you can only appeal what you objected to. You know, if you didn't object, you're kind of hosed. That's why you have all those objections.
Apple asked the court to instruct the jury that Samsung engaged in serious misconduct and that as a result, the court has made a filing. This is the misconduct over Samsung leaking to the
press.
That
was a huge mistake. I don't understand.
Really,
I don't understand if they realized.
So what happened?
So Samsung couldn't get something into court. And they wanted instructions of not releasing stuff to the public.
Samsung wanted these pictures. They wanted this Sony-style defense where they said, Apple was copying Sony.
Right.
And the judge says, no, you cannot introduce that. So according to some, Samsung or somebody who agreed with them leaked this to the press.
They didn't just leak it. They leaked it with a quote. Like, this was stuff that wasn't allowed into
the
court case.
The judge was pissed and, in fact, instructed it went to each juror one by one and said, did you see that article? Trying to make sure that the jurors were not tainted.
In some ways, it's like jury tampering in some ways. You know, and it's a big
deal. So Apple wants the judge to instruct the jury that Samsung engaged in misconduct.
Well, not only that, Apple wants the ruling now. They just said, what Apple doesn't want is a mistrial because they don't want it to delay. They don't want this to stretch out.
They just want the judge to rule.
There's a theory that Samsung wants a mistrial because that's going to keep on delaying this out, and they'll want to stretch it out. So Apple doesn't want it to stretch out. They want to stay in court. They don't want to change the jury. They don't want to declare a mistrial. But they say that now they should just, that's.
Apple says fines are not a severe enough punishment. We want a judgment
against
the proper
Samsung.
Remedy for Samsung's misconduct is judgment that Apple's asserted phone design patents are valid and infringed.
And this is what every lawyer would do. I mean, just so you know, it's not like this is because after every time after the defense closes it, or after the prosecution closes,
you
it,
ask for a mistrial.
You ask for a mistrial. You ask for this to be. You ask for right. a, you know for the
summary judgment.
Summary judgment. So this is just them going. We should win now, and that's they have to do that. They wouldn't be lawyers if they didn't do that. So that's I think that makes sense. I do think that the big mistake is that I think anybody who sat in a court case realized it's very subjective, and the judge has a lot of power. And
By the way, Apple did the judge did decline that request. Right. We're going back in time a little bit.
Right. But you know,
so complicated.
These are complicated cases. They're a long time, and the judge has a lot of power to do a lot of things.
Right.
And you know, making the judge really irate is not a great way to move things forward. You know, like, you know, crossing them directly is a great way to have a lot of your objections overruled and
right.
a lot of so, things, you know, a lot of
so on Friday, Judge Koh said, no, not going to grant that. Samsung has responded by filing a motion to strike. This is trench warfare. This is a battle. The interesting revelation at the end of yesterday's hearing was an internal email from Samsung. This was kind of the bombshell that came out yesterday. J.K. Shin, Samsung's head of mobile communications, described the difference in user experience between Samsung and Apple. This is when the iPhone had first come out, as a difference between heaven and earth, heaven being the Apple iPhone. Mm. Samsung, of course, tried to keep that email from being admitted and had kept it out until now. But this morning, I'm reading from Mike Isaacs in All Things D. This morning, that is yesterday morning, Samsung legal counsel John Quinn mentioned, big mistake, I got to think, the crisis of design moment in a question to Samsung strategist Justin Dennison. At that point, Apple felt it's in.
Yeah.
He's now introduced something.
Stepped out of bounds.
We can put that memo in.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this is what Shin wrote. Influential figures outside the company come across the iPhone and they point out that Samsung, this is an internal memo to Samsung engineers, that Samsung is dozing off. All this time, we've been paying all our attention to Nokia and concentrated our efforts on things like folder, bar, slide. Yet when our UX, user design, is compared to the unexpected competitor of Apple's iPhone, the difference is truly that of heaven and earth. It's a crisis of design.
Okay, but what is he saying other than we need to make phones that are easier to use, that are more elegant, that are simpler?
Right. Well, he's not saying let's copy. It's not a smoking gun saying let's copy.
Well, right, and it's also not saying anything different than what Apple says. You know, there are 7-inch tablets that work well. We should think about that. You know, that's another, you know, on the other side of it is that you're always paying attention to your competition, and of course they're going to have this. I agree that I don't think that's necessarily like we should copy the app. You know, the iPhone. I don't think it's as much of a smoking gun as it's made out to be.
The only line in the email that maybe you could say that is, quote, I hear things like this. Let's make something like the iPhone. He's not saying it.
Mm.
He's saying, I hear this.
Right.
Not a smoking gun.
And also, these are internal memos. It's hard to... imagine how you would couch everything that you said in private conversation if you knew that it would have to be reinterpreted for the outside. Where you would... There's shorthand that you use that you know would be legally actionable because it'd be misinterpreted as something else completely. So this is... I've just seen this thing flagged as a smoking gun in too many blogs to think, oh, come on.
Which, by the way, this is another word of warning like we were talking about security before.
Yeah.
Is when you're writing emails, just remember that those are legal documents. You know, and...
They can be subpoenaed.
I use them all the time. I nail people down all the time. Like, I'll have a phone call with somebody, and
I always ask for it in writing.
I have a phone call with someone, and I go, as per our meeting, this is what my understanding was. If it's not that, let me know.
Right.
You know, but I kind of put a hook in there, like, just because I don't, you know, work with too many people. But.
Other revelations. And by the way, you could play this game, Andy and Alex, if you have your favorite. But another revelation I thought was interesting. Apple did not buy advertising after the original iPhone announcement. Schiller, discussing the iPhone, said Apple decided not to pay for any advertising during a brief period after the device was introduced. And when it went on sale later in the year, quote, we didn't need to, Schiller said. He read from several rave reviews of the iPhone and iPad explaining such stories did a better job than advertising to build buzz.
This is no news to anybody. This would be like having to take out full page ads in Rolling Stone to try to sell some tickets to a Beatles reunion in 1978. Right. The thing was going to go, and people were already talking about it. You know,
we did the advertising for them. I'm sad to say.
No, I mean, I don't. I wouldn't say we. Sad to say, I mean, we have this great position being in our jobs that sometimes we are genuinely enthusiastic yes. about something, and we get to like come on the microphone or take to the typewriter, the keyboard. And
hey, it was 2007.
I just saw a demonstration of this incredible touchscreen device. I actually got to use one for 38 blessed minutes. Let me tell you about what each minute of that experience with the iPhone in January was like. And it's not, I don't feel like a shill. I don't feel like I'm a stooge. I don't feel like I'm being exploited, because it comes from a sincere place. And I'm stopped because they filled me with complimentary shrimp and also comped me at the gaming tables, or paid off my gambling debts. It was just, this is just a cool, I always tell people, there's an awkward moment when I will write a almost embarrassingly positive review of something I like, and I'll get a thank you note from the guys who develop it, and I have to say, just keep making great stuff. I mean, you, right. you earned that, and you didn't have to. No thanks are necessary. Thank you for giving me something that made me very, very glad once again that I chose to write about technology instead of writing about the movies.
And when it came out, I mean, the bottom line is we all hated our phones, and we finally had something
that
we were excited about.
Scott Bourne should get a check from Apple. That's who should get a check from Apple.
You know, no, but. But my previous phone was actually a Windows phone, and I actually thought that they had done a really great job on the 5-button interface. It was a flip phone. It was actually designed to look like a Star Trek communicator, more than anything else. The apps for it were backed by really nice mobile apps. I liked it a lot. But yeah, as soon as you even saw the iPhone for the first time, you just never went back. And I don't think that it was really the iPhone that other companies were copying. It was the excitement that it caused. They're trying to copy. They're saying, if everybody is this excited about something that only maybe 80 people outside of Apple on this planet have even touched in a functional state, you know, maybe they're onto something. Maybe the Apple is onto something, and we should see what we're doing wrong with our own phones. If people aren't, you know, already lined up 6 weeks in advance to touch the hem of our next phone's garment.
So
I thought my favorite revolution is Apple. It was either a phone or a car.
What?
Yeah. There was one of the articles that we were reading that Apple was actually the other things they were considering, because they were looking at new markets to go into.
Either a phone
or
a car.
No, it wasn't either a phone or a car. I simplified that a little bit. Right. But one of the other what was the other one? There was I think a TV was one of the other
really?
Ones. But there was a list of other things they were thinking about, and a car was, because I think that Apple's going to eventually make a car.
I'd love an Apple car.
No, see. That totally synced in with your iPad and your iPhone
I would
and everything
love
else.
An Apple car.
See,
really.
I would you know,
Yeah, no, you're right. Now you got me excited.
When you talk about my opinion is how Apple gets to a trillion dollar market value.
Right.
It's cars. Cars. It's big. It's big yeah. business. And think of all these iPhone users that would buy a car, an Apple wow. car.
It'd have to be a hybrid or electric.
It'd be a hybrid or electric. Yeah. It would be like simple. There wouldn't be there'd be a steering wheel, but there'd be, you know, not a lot of knobs.
The only problem with an Apple car is that people would actually aim their cars at you. The only negative.
Also, putting that white sticker in the back would actually be superfluous. That's kind of fun.
Right. Yeah.
But I
for some reason, I always think of it as a VW bug.
Headlights. Like, but headlamps styling. In an Apple shape logo.
We're already seeing it in the form, I think, of the Tesla, where the new, what's the new model? The one that's the four-door sedan?
Yes. Right.
Where it's incredibly cool, uses incredibly advanced technology. The cockpit is amazing. Yeah. It comes with this huge, beautiful touchscreen in the center console that controls everything. It is one of the most desirable and wonderful cars ever made, but it costs way too much money, and it is way out of reach of the majority of the people
right.
Out there. I do think that Apple would have a problem creating a car that any significant number of people could afford.
I bet you if they did one, it would be between $25,000 and $40,000. It wouldn't be like a cheap one. It wouldn't be a luxury one. I think it would be in that range. And I think that there's just a lot of people, when you look at the interface stuff, like I was test driving a car over the weekend, and it had a great...
Which car?
BMW. It was new. Anyway, I'm not going to buy it. It's too much money.
It's
so anyway,
a lot
so
of money, yeah.
It was way too much money. Yeah. So I was like, but I had to try it. So anyway, the BMW has this incredible interface, you know, that
all
you can kind
of
swip through
now,
and everything else. But I have to admit, I was just kind of like, I don't really want to learn that interface. What
did
I really
want
is to be able to attach my. It didn't. Oh yeah, it did have the knob.
Yeah. See, I don't like the knob. That's wrong. Yeah, there's something wrong there. That's why I like Ford, because you talk to it, and the knob is, to me, anything that you have to fiddle.
Yeah. Well, and my thing is, I didn't want to learn new interface. I just want my iPad to work in it. Yeah. Like, I just was like, you don't need to build that. Like, I really don't need something new. And I think that's the issue, is that I want, like, when I look at where Apple can go, it's anything that I want to interface my stuff with, whether it's a washer and dryer or a refrigerator or whatever. I just want to interface with my iLife.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think I've said this before, that I often contrast the way that I relate to technology to the way I relate to my car, where I'm a straightforward, plain Jane, boring consumer when it comes to cars. I am the person who thinks that that the Crown Victoria is a sweet, sweet ride. When I look at cars, really the in addition to like all the mechanical stuff, I'm looking for, is there a blank spot somewhere on the dash where I could bolt in my RAM mount for my iPhone mount? And if it has one, okay, good, I'm fine. Well, but don't you want to hear about the really wonderful Senator? Nope.
But just think if Apple made a car, you wouldn't be. Someone was mentioning this on the chat, but it's, you wouldn't be able to change the battery.
Right.
There'd be certain parts of the city you just can't go. You know, I mean, you know, just be like, no, you can't. You don't want to go there. We're trying to keep you sandboxed into the good parts of the, you know, town, and
it would get terrible reception.
we get bad reception.
Let's move on. One more thing from the trial coming up. Susan Kerr, who is just incredible, was on the original Mac team. She did the original icons for the Mac. She will be on the witness stand. I believe
I just have to design
week.
32x32 icons, and I just have so much respect.
She
for
is
do it well,
just wonderful. She worked for Microsoft, by the way. She did icons for Microsoft.
She works for anybody smart enough to hire her.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a big mystery as to why she's on Apple's list, is it?
No. She did the Facebook gifts. Remember that, when you could buy somebody something on Facebook, a virtual gift? She did those original icons. You could tell, too, because it was a unique style. Yeah. So Apple is expected to ask her to talk about the design of Samsung's devices compared to three of Apple's design patents. She is a designer. Yeah. Let's see, who else? Apple, each side has 25 hours of court time and up to 50 witnesses. So there's a fairly long list on the CNET of people who were expected to hit the stand.
I'm interested to hear if they talk to her about the design of icons that Samsung put on their first generations of post iPhone devices. Mm-hmm. Because I am the first one to say, oh, look, I mean, there's some things that are just logical when you're designing a handheld device. But then there are other elements where, yeah, but they actually took like the icons for the music player and the calendar, like pixel for pixel.
Yeah, that was the issue. That was the issue that I think it really got Samsung. It's one thing to make it look just the same on the outside, but it was like all these icons are the same. All the, you know, there's so many things that were copied. I think
the first generation of Samsung like post iPhone devices, there was just no defense they possibly had. They were trying to, I honestly believe that they're hopefully trying to catch people saying, oh, well, that looks exactly like that. Is actually, I thought it was called an I something, but okay, it's the okay, got it. Nope, this is good.
If that's the case, then this is a very legitimate court case. I mean, that's really what the whole thing boils down to.
Parts of it are, a lot of it, I think, is overreaching. We see now Apple with the full Apple graphic arts treatment, the famous, well, this is what every phone looked like before the iPhone. And now, after the iPhone, every phone looked like the iPhone. I'm like, actually, no, that's not true at all. Every phone looked like, no, it's like, I said every phone looked like the iPhone. It's like, okay, you're being really... you could work for a presidential candidate with logical like that, logic like that, but okay.
Yeah. Let's do a break and then come back with tips and picks. The usual. I think we've got everything.
I've got such a great pick.
Do you have a pick?
I'm so excited.
All right.
I got a good tip, too.
But first, and I am going to mention this now because they bought the ad, and it really is a great product, Carbonite. And I'm just going to say, I'm just going to mention, Matt, if you want, I can set you up with a little deal. I should just get Matt a Carbonite account. Because really, then nothing to worry about. It's not that the cloud is bad. It's just you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And this is why that 3-2-1 backup is so important. Three copies of everything, two different forms of media, so you're not, you know, all zip disk. You know, you've got two different guys, and one of them off-site, and Carbonite is it. It's a continuous, automatic, off-site backup to the cloud. Your Carbonite account, absolutely safe. secure. You can actually encrypt it further if you wish. They offer that as an option, and only you have the keys. They always use SSL, which means whenever you're online anywhere, you're backing up safely, securely, and $59 a year for everything on your hard drive. $59 per year per computer. That's a good deal. You could try it free for 2 weeks. I do recommend that. You want to see how it works on your system, Mac or PC. They do have small business and home office accounts as well. Some don't work on the Mac yet. They still are Windows only. But if you want that simple, easy to use, back it up for less than $5 a month, you got to go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MacBreak when you try it. Just click the Try Home Free button. Offer code MacBreak. And by the way, you don't need a credit card to do this. And after the 2 week trial, if you decide to buy, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12. Carbonite was designed to solve this problem. It's been around for a long time. I'm surprised more people don't use it. I'm doing my best to spread the word. Carbonite is really good for a laptop. Carbonite.com. The offer code is MacBreak.
It's the good part of the cloud.
Well, you said it.
You got to have it.
You shouldn't. You got to have different. Heterogeneity is your friend in this particular case.
Yes.
Putting everything in one spot, not good.
Basket. Everything in one basket.
One basket, so to speak. Do you want to do an iOS tip? I always ask you this.
Yes.
All right.
So, having anything to do with the lion tip first.
Lion
tip
first.
I want to make sure I get proper attribution because someone sent me this. So I want to make sure I get
Andrew.
It
right.
Well, this is sort of a minor tip. Oh, there it is. Hang on. I'm cycling through Windows.
I love that javelin thrower, by the way, behind you. She's
yes,
gorgeous.
That's a Soviet poster from like the 1950s or something.
Did you watch the heptathlon? I keep trying to find it. I can't find it anywhere.
Such a great ending.
But when Ennis won that 800-meter leading start to finish, you know, that's javelin, shot put, running. I mean, that has to be the event, like the, you know, Olympic event. You're an all-around athlete. And look at her. You could tell.
And she ran she's not even known for running that 800.
Right.
And she ran it was 800 or 400, but it was a textbook win. I mean, it was just really well done.
Just amazing. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no trouble. This is sort of a minor tip where that yeah, again, that's a woman that you're going to, yeah, that's, anyway.
I don't know what it says, but I love her already.
Them Soviets had a lot to fight home for. That was good. Apple has a whole bunch of RSS feeds you should know about. One of them is that there's so much things going on the iTunes store, you can't really keep up with the flow of new stuff. Sometimes people ask me, gee, how do you keep coming up with like new picks for like software for iOS and macOS? A lot of it comes from when I see someone using an app and I think it's really good, or I see someone talk about it or it's reviewed on a blog and that's good. Another part of it is that I actually have RSS feeds set up to inform me just so I can get a big picture of what's coming into the store. And Apple actually has an RSS feed generator at itunes.apple.com/RSS. And it's actually a tiny little web app, like a web form, where you just navigate through a bunch of pop-up menus where after you decide what store you want to keep an eye on, you can say, I want to find out about this feed to cover iOS apps. I want you to not show me, there's like a million different options of what kind of iOS apps you want to check out. Say, I want you to show me every new app or every new free app or every new paid app. And then just show me the first 50 and only the ones that are in productivity. And then just click the generate button. It will give you an RSS feed that you can do, then you can plug into Google Reader. And I mean, it's you are like Lucy and Viv trying to box chocolates if you're trying to keep up with everything that gets posted to the store. But every time you dip in, if you go through those 50 in the list that you or the 10 in the list, you're liable to see something interesting that's worth clicking on that link and seeing what it's all about. As a matter of fact, my pick of the week this week is something that I discovered through my macOS app RSS feed. itunes.apple.com/RSS. Very, very handy.
And, of course, they took RSS out of both Mail and Safari. In fact, I got a complaint from a woman who said, you know, they not only took the feature out of Mail, but they actually I lost everything because it just is gone. And she said, it took me a long time to figure out, I think she got support from Apple, that the feeds are persist, but they persist kind of probably in the application support folder. So she had to go dig and finally found everything. But that is kind of a shock. You upgrade to Mountain Lion and all your feeds are gone. So what do you like for a feed reader? What do you use? What do you recommend?
On the desktop, actually, I actually use Google Reader as my main. I'm talking about the web app as my main app, chiefly because it's the one platform agnostic system where I know how it works, place by place by place. Also, I've subscribed to so many different feeds that I don't always know for sure that I'm going to get to. I want to make sure that my place is kept from app to app. On the desktop, I had to actually go into Mission Control to make sure that I got the exact right one. Reader is my favorite analog of Google Reader. R-E-E-D-E-R, right. It's not even a terribly expensive app. It works exactly like Google Reader in that whatever you do, let's say on your Android phone, on your iPhone, it will be reflected in your reader counts. The alternative to Reader for me is NetNewsWire, chiefly because it lets you have subscribed to feeds outside of Google Reader. It's a very timely question because finally, after realizing that my Google Reader subscriptions had become really difficult to use as an actual tool, because you want to know how old some of the feeds in that subscription were. I actually had a subscription to YouTube newly posted videos.
Not anymore.
There were so few videos being posted to YouTube. You could actually have an RSS feed that told you all of them. Like, oh gosh, only 8 today. Oh well, there's nothing really
hysterical,
there.
Isn't it? Oh my god.
Yeah, I wound up with well over somewhere close to about 1,000, a little bit over 1,000. And so, and unfortunately, over the past X number of years, I had never been completely diligent about making sure they're all organized in folders. So it was a total, total mess. And I finally had to do the aliens, Lieutenant Ripley algorithm, which is just nuke it all from orbit. It's the only way. And started again from zero. The first thing I did, though, was export all 1,000 of those into an OPML file. Getting to the point now, I could actually import this into NetNewsWire. These 1,000 feeds are not a Google Reader subscription, but I have them offline so that as I keep weeding things out and slowly moving things into Google Reader, now I'm up to maybe 80 or 90. I'll probably be up to about 200 or 300 by the time I'm finished, like the stuff that I really rely on to get my news and information from. But it's nice that I'll also be able to have lesser important news feeds and blogs offline that will not contaminate, will not ruin the experience of trying to just keep up to date while I'm waiting in line at the deli. And that's why I use NetNewsWire for.
That's a veteran Mac app, which I've used for years and years.
Doesn't it make you happy that there are some of these tools that have just been getting the job done? Yeah. Like the Gene Hackman of the OS of the app world, where you know they're always out there and they're always doing good stuff year after year after year.
Yeah. Getting the job done since 2005.
There you go.
iOS tip.
Okay. So this one.
Look at that, man.
Oh, no, that's my pick. That's not a tip. Yeah.
Save that for later.
That's what I'm talking about. Oh, mama. That's what I'm talking about. So this tip is Derek Slater sent this in, and this is – so I tweeted this morning, like, I'm looking for a tip. When he said it, I didn't believe it would work, but it does. So what you do is you – if you are in anything that can type, so let's just say you're text messaging. So I'll go into my text message, and I will text message my daughter. All right. So anywhere the cursor's sitting here, mm-hmm. if you go up, if you put it up to your head, so if you start typing and go, "Hello, I just want to test the text on my SMS." There it is.
Just by putting it up to your head, Siri launched the dictation.
Siri was the dictation. So the dictation worked just by putting it up to my head and starting to talk. And I find that
that. So you can finish it.
You're just like, I can't keep on typing this. Blah, 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 blah. You know, but that's all you hear it? It was like, wait, hold on. See, if I pull it up here, it's still waiting. Anyway, so I thought that was a great little tip. So anywhere your cursor is sitting, you can just put it up to your head and just start talking. You don't have to hit the little microphone. That's what I always did before, is I'd hit the microphone and you just start talking. It's just there. So anyway, that's my tip.
Good tip. Just put it to your head.
Just put it to your head.
See what happens.
Put the phone to the head and pull.
And now it's time for... Actually, you know what? I'm going to... Instead of doing a pick, I'll do a quick tip. And it's actually, in a way, a news story. There's been a lot of conversation about how the fact that you no longer have a save is... In Mountain Lion,
that one's
save
important.
As.
Yeah. That's an important news item.
Good article in Mac Performance Guide.com where he points out that, yes, there is a workaround. We've mentioned it before. Hold down the option key for the... So let me do it in Pages, because Pages is one of the programs that lost its
right
save as.
Not that I'm bitter.
Well, but I'm going to point out something. But anyway, so there's no save as when you... let's create a blank document here real quickly. New document. Okay. You can see I haven't used Pages in a while. There we go. That's not me. But it could be. Maybe next year. But you see, there's no save as anymore. If you press the option key, save as appears. But here's the most important thing to understand. It is not what you think it is. If one edits a document, this is from MacPerformanceGuide.com, and chooses save as, then both the edited original and the copy are saved. Not only saving new copy, but silently saving the original with the same changes, overwriting the original.
Well, because that's what it does. Well, it's iterating it, so it's not really overwriting it. It's adding to the iterations.
It's versioned, right?
But people may not understand.
Right. The only way to handle this would be to, as soon as you open your document, save as, and then keep on going,
right,
knowing that.
Right.
Now, I have to point out, there's
The difficulty is that I think Apple arbitrarily decided that here is a way that everybody expects Save As to work. We're going to have it work differently from now on and not make that monumentally obvious, which I think is just an obvious mistake.
They have in place of, you know, the Save As right below Save in Pages is Duplicate, which to me is kind of
a lot of extra.
Is that not the same?
I know, but it's just like it's Duplicate. Now, do you want to revert it? Okay, I want to revert it and then duplicate it, and then I have to save as again. I mean, just a whole lot of steps for I want to save one more iteration.
Well, I think Duplicate is more of an explicit fork.
Yeah. Right, but isn't that what you use Save As for?
No, yeah. I use it as iterations. Like I don't want.
Yeah, you're forking it now.
But I don't want it. I don't want it to iterate everything. I want to say this is where I want to keep this document.
Duplicate will do that.
Yeah.
I know, but it's a lot of steps rather than hit save as.
It's one step, duplicate. Now I've got two.
The difficulty for me is that
now I have to save it.
Well, not only that, it's duplicate. It's usually, do you want to revert the file you were in before? What happens a lot of times is I'll use something as a template, you know, in Numbers. I do a lot of stuff in Numbers. And so I will take an old quote that I did for some other company, and I'll start working on it, and then I'll realize, oh, now I have to duplicate and revert. So it's not just duplicate. I want to duplicate and revert the one that I had because that was somebody else's quote.
Too far down the road.
I start
using
as
a template, and then, that's different. You're using it wrong.
No, I mean, it's just...
holding it wrong.
It's just save as worked great.
I'm just pointing out that this has changed, and you should be careful when you use save as because the behavior is different. But if I go to file, I've created the first version, right? And now I go to file, duplicate. It doesn't do the same thing as save as. What it literally does is creates on a screen a copy, which you could then rename to the second version. Now I have two versions, and that's kind of what I was expecting. It took one more step than save as does.
Yeah. I don't think Apple should be really faulted for creating a versioning system that I think maybe needs to be tweaked. I think that they should have understood that over the next year or two, we might have to modify how it works as we adapt to how people are using it. For me, I really wish it worked the way that, for instance, Scrivener's version of versioning worked, where you can actually take explicit snapshots and name them as well as doing the automatic backups, because the way that I work, I want to say, here's the point which I got a 4,000 word column. I know I got to cut it down to 2,800. I'm going to take a snapshot of the original and say, here it was with all the flab intact, so that if I ever need to rewind it back to a specific point, I don't have to guess as to I don't have to try to guess, okay, it was a Monday. I think it was an afternoon because the Maury Povich show was on. It was one of those baby shows. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. It was Oprah, but it was like Oprah's next. Oh, damn it. Which one was it? That's not easier than simply rolling back to an actual named snapshot.
Right. Like you, I have very specific times that I when I do a destructive edit, or I'm about to do a destructive edit, I'll save something, that's where I want to remember to go back to if I have to. And I it's not like I want to do it every time I make a change. So,
right.
Anyway.
It's just, I'm saying this as a warning. It's kind of like when Apple changed the scroll. It's like, they're doing it differently. And sorry.
And then you had to be upset until you figured out where to go in preferences.
The main thing is, once you learn this option, save as, to not assume that that's going to be the same as your old save as was.
Right.
It's still not the same.
Right.
That's my main point.
Yeah.
Andy, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is a really cool combination graphics demo and screensaver called Textify Me, T-E-X-T-I-F-Y Me, and it's on the Apple, the iTunes store. And what it is, unfortunately, I've been trying to figure out a way to demonstrate it, but there's no way to do it. What it does is it will give you a live camera shot of what your camera is doing, but it will transmogrify it into ASCII text live.
I'm going to do it.
At a very
I'm downloading
high
frame it right
rate.
Now.
It's free. and it's free. The cool thing is, and also after you launch it, realize that you can also, if you activate the menu bar, you can change the size of the point size of the text so that on a Retina Mac, the text, the individual characters are going to be so small that you don't know what it's doing, but it just looks really, really cool. But then you can slide it up so that it looks really like at the county fair in 1977.
So that's in the live menu?
Go in the menu bar.
Oh, and you can make this a screensaver. Now, is it a single screen or does it?
I believe it's a still live screensaver.
Wow. This is so cool. Yeah, so the color, character resolution, so you can make it bigger so it's a little more ASCII.
Right.
Video contrast. Oh, this is sweet.
This is just, I know that it's just a very low resolution image when you look at it, but the idea that it can do this live, that you can actually move around and you just see like ASCII text shifting around. That is just kind of the coolest thing ever.
So matrixy.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's green. You can make it. It's green screen, but you could make it amber if you had a different.
if you're over 32 years old, you can make it both colors, green
or black
or
and white. Yeah.
Wow. If you're over 50, you can also make it white.
This is so cool. Awesome. All right, very good pick, and it's free. Textify Me in the App Store.
And of course, now Leo and I both have it running.
They do warn you that's not certified for 10.8 yet. It seems to work okay, but I'm sure they wouldn't say 10.8 coming soon unless they just had it in.
Let me see. I'm gonna install it as a screensaver because I'm really curious what happens now as a screensaver. Where is it? Textify Me. Where'd it go? Oh, there it is. Okay, so it's selected.
The lights are flashing. Look at this.
Yeah, it does everything. It's so cool. Screensaver awesome. Options, same options as before. Let's make a hot corner of the lower left so I can just see what it looks like. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to turn on the Textify Me screensaver. Is it live? Yeah. Wow, that's the screensaver.
Yeah. Of course, it's not going to save the screen as much, but
who cares?
But it's cool.
Yeah, but it's a good way to make sure that when you get back to your cubicle with your coffee, they're like nine people like going like this in front of your screen.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh my God, look at it!
I have to admit, my kids would probably do that for hours.
Mm. Wow, that's neat. Okay, thank you. Good pick. Your turn, Alex. Top that. Oh, you're going to, too, I could tell. Mm.
So one quick one. I talk a lot about iBooks. Video to Brain, which is kind of like they do video training. They have an iBooks author workshop. So if you're interested in iBooks and you want to figure some of that stuff out, it's by Joseph Lanasky, who's actually on TWIP a lot, This Week in Photography. So he's great, and I'm sure it's a great – I'm going to be downloading it. I looked at some of the examples, and it looks great. So anyway, check that out. And but here's my pick. So I have to admit, I'm so excited. John Saunders, who I do a lot of production with, he had this at one of the things we were doing on Friday, and I just lost my mind. So this is called Aria, and this is on the iPad.
I'm looking at the screenshot. I'm just laughing. Go ahead. before you show it, realize, audience, that there are designers at Apple that are going to have a conniption.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is definitely not what the iPad was designed for.
Oh, but it is. It is.
A-R-I-A?
This is, it's A-U-R-I-A, I believe.
A-U-R, like Aria. Got it.
I put the link on the thing. But this is, it's a multi-track recorder. I believe it'll do up to 24-track recording. With your iPhone, with your camera connector. So you take a USB
mixer.
You feed it into your iPad, and it's a multi-track. And look at this. So you hit
48 tracks.
It'll manage up to 48 tracks. I think it'll record up 24 at a time on your iPad. Yeah, 24 tracks on your iPad.
This looks like my...
Look at this. So you hit play.
Can you, do we have an over-the-shoulder?
This is the only one I have. Here. So,
well, you're gonna have to move your
movement.
I can do that. Look at this. Okay, look so this is doing a playback.
Holy
right now.
Cantoli!
And let me. I'll turn up the. There we go.
It's got reverb. It's got stereo delay and chorus.
So you just have
auto pitch correction.
Yeah, you can pop this up and down. And then look at this.
And sliders.
Waveform editor.
So you're like, oh, this. You know, that's a lot.
Look at that.
Yeah. Look at this. Okay. And these are now.
It's $50.
That's pretty awesome. But check this out.
And you can edit this. This is like Adobe's Audition.
Yeah, it's like or
this is
like,
amazing. Wow. Can you overdub? So if I'm only using the built-in mic or an external mic,
I believe you can use. I can record track after track. And the thing is that this is
up to 24 tracks simultaneous recording.
Yeah, simultaneous recording.
Sample rates 44.1, 48, and 96 at 24 bits if you have an iPad 3.
And the thing is that if
it supports VST plugins.
Yeah, that's all I got to say. It's just, I mean, it's incredible. It's got auxes. It's got two auxes built in.
Works with Dropbox, SoundCloud.
It's insane. It's insane. And I get that $50 is a lot for an iPad app, but this is more functional than, you know, the Pro Tools that I bought for $6,000.
Yeah, this is actually amazing.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, and this is what I guess
this is my app cap for Thursday's iPad today. I have to say,
it's just insane.
It's too bad it's so expensive, but you know, that's a deal for what you're getting.
No, for what you're doing though, it's expensive compared to lots of little games and single like whatever, but this is a real production app. I mean, for $50. So it's in relationship to,
I could have done this network for the first 3 years thing.
You could be recording podcasts through a little mixer going
easily,
into here and
easily
and doing all this. Anyway, that's so it's called.
They really need to, for the next version, to make it communicate with nearby iPads so you can actually put four iPads next to each other and have the entire console
exactly.
in one suite.
Exactly.
Wow. You'd need a mixer if you want more than one channel at a time, obviously, and that'll work through the camera connection kit via USB. USB mixer.
Yes.
Okay. It is the ultimate skeuomorphic design.
It is. This is the ultimate. But I mean, this is, you know, it would be hard for guys who do this to switch over to something else.
That's what we're used to.
This is what
it looks like.
I have to admit, knobs don't work
knobs
that well.
Knobs are
in
not
touch.
So good.
They're kind of.
Yeah.
But I will say, though, it's just killer.
Andy Nocco's at the Chicago Sun-Times. He also has a website, www.cwob, the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, and you can .com. And you can catch him .com on the 5x5 network with his Inocco's Almanac every week, and of course here on Mac Break Weekly every week. Thank you, Andrew.
It's always a slice. It's
good to have you, Alex. Good to have you. Mr. Alex Lindsay's at the Pixel Core, pixelcore.com. His podcast, pixelcore.tv. Anything else you want to plug?
We're going to be opening PixelCore again soon, in the fall. But in the meantime, we're just hiring location people all the time. People should follow me on Twitter and G+. You know,
do you like tweet? I need five people.
I need three people in here. I need, you know, I haven't been doing that lately. I've been mostly, because we film most of it through the PixelCore. So mostly when we hire people inside of the PixelCore. But in areas that we don't,
And what kind of skills?
You know, we're looking for people who understand video production for the most part, and also understand oftentimes, you know, just, you know, are computer savvy, which of course the listeners here are. So so computer savvy people with video skills. But you should definitely follow me on Twitter and G+, and you can find me. It's at Alex Lindsay and G+. You just search for Alex Lindsay.
LINDSAY.
Yeah, and so, but those are the two places that I'm going to be starting to talk more about some of the stuff we're looking for and also do some more training related to it and all that stuff. So
cool.
Stay tuned.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you all for being here. We do this show 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday on twit.tv. You can, that's 1800 UTC if you're outside the U.S. You can also watch on-demand versions via, you know, the usual download places. People are always asking me, what's the best way? Any way that you can download it is okay by me. But if you subscribe in iTunes, we get one little added benefit, the potential for iTunes promotion, you know, showing up on those most listened to lists, things like that. So that certainly helps.
Be a mensch, and
make sure he gets a copy every week. Any of the subscription services, and even just clicking a download link is fine as well. If you like this show, remember we've got two other Apple-oriented programs. iPad Today every Thursday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. With Sarah Lane and me, we talk about iPad, iPad apps, iPad tips. And then Sarah does i5 for the iPhone, a quick 5 tips or apps for the iPhone every Monday. And she does it at 11 a.m. as well. Yes, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time.
Correct, on Mondays.
On Mondays. So there's lots for you to consume. We did. We brought the Aurea site down.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, obviously they were not on Squarespace.
Sorry.
Just that's thanks. What we do. We take the websites of good things and we ruin them for everybody.
That's why we can't have good things.
That's what we advertise on Squarespace. We have Squarespace advertisements so that people understand they need to move over that before we recommend their app.
Before we recommend your app, get good hosting. Yeah. Thanks, everybody. New mission images from. I almost tapped my screen on the Mac. MacBook that just shows you too much iPad usage.
See?
New images from Mars. Oh boy. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Get back to work. Break time is over.